Auto Line After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Dow Automotive Systems, innovations for clean powertrain solutions.
This is Auto Line After Hours with John McElroy, episode 89 for Thursday, February 3rd, 2011. To be or not be too. Watch Autoline After Hours live at autolinedetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern or 2400 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for Autoline After Hours in the iTunes Store. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. We're here again doing Auto Line After Hours, and I'm doing it with the Auto Extremist here, as always.
John, how are you?
Present, sir.
Yes, we are here. I'm with the Argyle Brothers.
And Peter's made that remark because also joining us tonight is Frank Marcus from Motor Trend Magazine, who, like me, is wearing an Argyle sweater.
It's all the rage.
I didn't get the memo, sorry.
Clearly.
And we've also got John Warniak from SEMA with us tonight, too.
Glad to be here, John. Glad to be here.
It's great to be here. But
super.
The reason that Frank and I are wearing sweaters is, man, it's winter. It's winter up here up north. And
vengeful winter.
Yeah. Man, what a snowstorm we had yesterday. I don't know about you guys, but I was home.
I was, too. Although, frankly, I felt a little gypped. I think Chicago got all the fun. They got 20 inches. If I have 12 at my house, I'd be amazed.
Well, those pictures from Chicago with the traffic jam stuck on Lakeshore were just unbelievable. If you've ever been
bad to news,
that
yeah.
was bad news. Nasty news.
That's nasty, and you know, too bad for those people that got caught in
and
it.
And some people were stuck there for like 11 hours.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Cars don't move.
And then their cars drifted in. Yeah. And then they can't move them.
Well, you know, we were in Washington, D.C. last week, and I got a chance to interview Margot Ogay, who's like the number two person, essentially, at the EPA. She told me it took her 11 hours to get home. And D.C. was a disaster, just total disaster. I think they got like 6 inches of snow, but it was a very slushy, yeah. mm-hmm. heavy snow. Mm-hmm. But then the next day, somebody in the Washington Post wrote a pretty good article. They said, thank God we don't have electric cars yet.
Yeah.
Because imagine being stuck in your car for 11 hours. At least if you got a full tank as you're idling, you know, at least you got the engine on, you can stay warm. But how long would it take for an electric car to conk out? And then think of thousands, even if it's just hundreds of electric mm-hmm. cars stranded in the snow like they were in Chicago or were in Washington and a whole lot of other places.
They'll have to be towed.
You can't just, you know, come up with a can of gas and, you know, put some more exactly. in the tank and get going.
It's a whole new paradigm when you walk in.
And
that.
You can't even bring a charger up there. So that means you would have to have thousands of cars towed. I don't know. It's got to take weeks to do that.
Well, the whole electrification thing, let's be real, you know. Was it Obama said by 2015 there'll be a million of them on the road?
Yep.
They're already
saying to do it.
It ain't going to happen.
No, it's not going to happen.
Not anytime soon.
Does he count volts in that number?
I don't.
Oh, yeah.
Because, I mean, your volt can sit there and idle and warm the car up for a good little while if you had it filled up, which if you're a total greenie and never turn it on, you may be a tank full of old gas, but, you know.
Well, I think Obama's counting volts and probably plug-ins as well, other plug-ins like the Prius that's coming in.
Yeah,
but we're not going to get there. It's going to be a...
I agree.
I mean, urban centers, we're going to see the clown cars and the pod cars, you know, but it's just...
Well, you know, interesting thing here, gas has been creeping up. The price of gasoline has been creeping up.
Yeah.
And people are going, oh, my God, you know, here we go again. Oh, it's going... And I thought, well, this is going to drive sales of small cars and hybrids. No way. I mean, if you go by January numbers, which we just had, it's...
Welcome to the Autoline After Hours Lounge.
Yeah.
Where's Randy Moody?
Yeah. I need the lounge lizard. Okay. With his Argyle Forrest Gump sweater on.
Right. We just lost a light here in the studio, but no big deal.
Is Lieutenant Dan here?
Yeah. Oh, we got to talk about that in a minute, too. But
I think you're right. I would much rather see the greenness go to biofuels and whatever. If you had 100%, you know, non-food crop biofuels, I just did a thing on butanol.
Yeah,
which kind of looks interesting to me. It's like a super ethanol, much closer to gasoline and the energy content.
Well, what about the 3 years ago at the Detroit Auto Show? What's the name of that company? The GM?
Cascada.
I mean, you know, I'm Swiss.
This just in, Peter. And here's from, literally just came in from Bloomberg. Cellulosic ethanol to take off in 2013. Is what they're saying now.
Yeah, that's costly.
And that's what we need is, you know, I keep pointing this out. People don't realize how much ethanol we're making in this country right now. I mean, it's we are literally exporting it. That's how much there is. Mm-hmm. That's why EPA wants to take it from E10 to E15, because the cellulosic guys can't get going right now. We're flooded with ethanol, and the market is saying
fine if it got cheap enough to where E85 for the 8 million vehicles already to run on E85. If E85 was a little cheaper to run, even given the fact that your range is way shorter, if it was, because it looks a lot cheaper anyway, but you don't go as far, if it was really cheaper, we would sell it. But it's not now.
It has to be 25% cheaper than gasoline for you as a consumer to come out ahead.
Make any sense? Right. Yeah. So. And what do you guys all think about? I mean, do I want to run my Maserati on my 1967 car on E15? I don't think so.
No, it's pretty corrosive. There's a lot of changes you got to make.
I don't think so.
You're running it on no lead, though, right?
Right.
It's designed for leaded gasoline.
Well, it's had the, you know, it's been restored. It's got the hardened seals and so forth on there. But like you say, I mean, they're saying 2007 cars are newer. Well, what, you're not going to have a thing that comes up
to say 2001.
Oh, is it 01 now? Okay.
Right. But see, look, it would even go faster than that. The EPA is under enormous pressure because Congress is the one that mandated thou shalt produce 32 billion gallons of biofuel by 2025 or whatever the number is. I can't recall it off the top of my head. So EPA has said, okay, we're going to have to increase the blend rate, and then everybody who makes chainsaws and...
See, the thing is, this butanol can be made in all the same plants. Most, even I think some of the cellulosic ones can be easily converted over to make butanol. And you can run 10% butanol way easier. It's not corrosive. It doesn't, you know, screw anything up. You can run up to 16%, I think, actually.
They run butanol in the ALMS.
Yeah, Mazda. I didn't know that.
I did not know that.
And now I do.
They do. I mean, ALMS has got all kinds of stuff going on in there.
Hey, jumping topics on your column this week, you went back after Lieutenant Dan at General Motors again.
Well, I needed further enhancement after I was hung in effigy from the center tower of the Rensen by Mr. Bingle and his band of merry men. You know, GM is at a very critical juncture right now. Bob has left the building. They've got all those products. You know, they've got some fantastic products. They're good for 3 years. They've just come out of bankruptcy. Now, Dan Akerson was brought in to make that IPO happen. Mm-hmm. My argument was, that's fine. Was he the best guy to take the reins of the company after the IPO? And my argument is no. And you know, because he has a few bad habits. He doesn't listen. He's one of these instant experts, which we've all seen in this business.
You mean instant expert in knowing what cars are all about and what
the business, how it happens, what makes it tick. Mm-hmm. We've all seen these guys come through, and inevitably it's a disaster.
Yep, Zarella, you're thinking, maybe.
Smale.
Oh, yeah.
Zarella.
Nardelli.
And go back the whole lineage. When think about it, though, there's an old adage. Do you want the best person, or do you want the best person, available?
Well,
best person available.
He was the hand raiser because, you know, Ed Whitaker, they said they were shocked Ed walked. Ed telegraphed he was not there for the long haul. Yeah. And so they all claimed, what are we going to do? And it was really one of these things where where Ackerson was the guy who raised his hand the quickest.
Of course, one of the other stories that are out there in the business is that it was actually Ackerson who connived with a couple of his other board buddies to push Whitaker out.
Well, be that as it may, and not to mention that Ackerson's personal style is very combative and belligerent, and you know, so if he starts listening, you know, they might be okay. But if he continues the way he's going, I think GM's going to be in trouble, and I think some bad decisions are going to be made that's going to affect this company negatively in the market by 2015, 2016, which they don't need.
Well, one of the things that even one of the local TV stations was reporting on the news tonight is that Ackerson has told the Volt team to take $7,500 out of the cost of the car by this time next year.
How?
And it's like, yeah, how and what? Exactly, John.
Yeah.
Well, now here is
this
technological achievement, which the Volt is. And you can't tell me that during the entire time they were working on that Volt, they were looking for every last ounce, penny, everything. You know, it's just coming out now that the sound system designed for the Volt is an achievement in itself, that it's 30% lighter or 40% lighter, and now they're going to sell it throughout the industry. So all these things were done. You can't tell me that those engineers weren't mindful of every last cent in the
development.
Absolutely.
It's state of the art. How do you?
So if you don't know anything about the business, you will say something like that. Well, I'll take the cost off.
Bingo. Yeah.
Well, my fear is that they go, oh, my God, we got to take all this out. So what do we do? Let's use polywarpaline on the dashboard now. You know, let's go to linoleum floor mats. Let's get rid of the heated seats. Let's because once the guy up high says this is what your target is, and that's that's just a crazy target. The stretch targets are one thing. Yeah. This is beyond stretch.
Yeah, it's one thing to put a challenge like that, but it's another thing to give credit to the folks that designed, engineered, developed, and got the Volt out.
You know, and
the vehicle's there.
And I had a reader irate from the UK say, well, you know, Mullally did it, so why can't Ackerson do it? And I didn't have time to go into the 47-page, dissertation on why these two gentlemen are 180 degrees apart. I mean, here's Mullally, who comes from an engineering background, who has worked at a major manufacturer of consumer products that have to be produced on time and costly and efficient and built efficiently and all this stuff, whereas Lieutenant Dan has kind of bounced around from company to company in a executive role.
Not always successfully.
No, not always successful. So I didn't have time to tell, but if that guy's watching, believe me, there's no comparison between these two guys.
Oh, yeah. One thing that Alan did, Alan came back and visited with Ford in 1984. The late Lou Veraldi, and some of the things that I got involved with at that time as well. They invited us, some of us, to come back to Ford.
We should mention Lou Veraldi, for those who don't know, is the guy who ran the original Taurus team. In fact, they called it Team Taurus.
The father of the Taurus. The guy that really benchmarked the world, came out with a world-class car.
And did such a good job of it. And it was the process by which they did that Mullally at Boeing learned about it and said, Lou, come on out to Seattle.
Absolutely. And they literally, Alan was so impressed with that, it became the product development process benchmark for the world. So you got to go back to 84 and say, Alan had a calibration of Ford back then. And look at what he did at Boeing and look at what he's doing at Ford. You don't replicate that.
No, and you know, my other problem is with the GM board, who I just think has been, I don't know how you change people on this board for the last 30 years, and it's still this bumbling entity. They need to be swept out. I don't care how accomplished they are in their individual backgrounds. They need to be swept out, and they need to start over, and they need to find a new CEO.
I completely agree with that.
And look what Bill Ford did. You know, they started that process 4 years ago. the best available or the best person, went out and went after.
Well, Bill realized he couldn't get it done at Ford. Yeah. The fiefdoms were so entrenched, and the bureaucracy was so entrenched in Ford.
Break it up.
And, you know, for the viewers out there who don't know Bill, he's the, one of the nicest billionaires you're ever going to meet in your life. And to a fault, almost.
He's like Mark Zuckerberg, you mean? That nice?
Well, I don't know about that, but, I mean, you know, Bill realized that these people weren't responding to him.
Yep.
And they and he realized, and that was a huge realization.
Self-admission.
Yeah, yeah. And to bring someone in, and he found the right guy.
That takes guts.
The only question I have, though, is I was shocked by Ford's fourth quarter profits. They were not good at all. They were shockingly low. And, in fact, Wall Street was shocked, too, and Ford's stock took a pounding in no time because of it. And when you look at January sales, the Ford brand did very well. It gained market share. Lincoln fell off a cliff. And even when you strip out the Mercury numbers, Lincoln was still way down. And what I'm reading into that is that when Mercury buyers came into the stores, salespeople were able to upsell a given percentage of them into Lincoln's. Hey, you know, for only $30 more a month, you can step into a real car kind of a thing. Well, that Mercury traffic's gone, and Lincoln sales fell off a cliff. I'm very bullish on Ford. I think this is not a problem, but this is kind of a wake-up call that these guys who have been on, you know, on the hill have some issues.
And they're making noises about realizing that a rear-drive car is needed over there, which is sounds like real good news.
Right, what are you hearing about that, Frank?
There's recognition now that, yeah, we need to look at that, and, you know, whether it's...
For Lincoln or for what?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I think the thing is... I think, you know, and I've written this a lot, I mean... This industry is a long way from being out of the woods.
A long way.
A long way.
Absolutely right, Peter.
And, you know, Ford, you know, this Alan Mulally has brought this global process into this company. So when they do a launch, I mean, it's not just, it's a global launch. And I, you know, they said it, and I think the media poo-pooed it, and Wall Street just dismissed it. But I think it's accurate that, they said that we got caught up in the costs of launching this Focus around the world. It's a much more elaborate undertaking than people realize. So,
well, I think one other thing is.
But I'm still bullish. I mean, they've got
I'm bullish. I'm bullish. But it was like
cars coming.
I saw that fourth quarter number and I went, what went wrong? And then I saw the January sales and I went, whoa. And it just shows how tough this business is. You can't take a second for a breather. You got to be pushing constantly.
And that's the other thing about Ackerson at GM. You know, this is a guy who's learning on the job of one of the biggest industrial concerns in the world still. And to my mind, that's not the way to do it. I mean, what do you think, Frank? I mean,
no, there's no way to run it at all.
You can't learn on the job like this. And then people say, well, Alan Mulally learned it. No, he didn't. He came with a whole set of credentials and process understandings and engineer. I mean,
even dealing with the UAW.
Yeah. So, okay, well, enough about
that. Hey, this is a great point to take a quick message, take a quick second to talk about one of our backers, and that's the Chevrolet Cruze. Chevrolet.com/cruise.
I drove one tonight.
Did you really?
Yeah, cool.
Well, there's sales, because remember a few months ago, people were saying, well, the sales aren't that good. They're really catching on. In fact, I can't wait to point out to Joel Iwanek that ever since he started advertising with us on the show, sales of the Cruise have been taken off.
Well, you can correlate those two together?
You know, I can, actually.
That's good.
One thing that has only been touched upon is GM is throwing some serious marketing dollars right now. And the other thing we should mention is they threw a ton of money on the hood in December and January.
Yeah, right.
And, you know, I mean a ton.
Yes, they did.
But one thing, Sunday on the Super Bowl in the fourth quarter, you're going to see a tease spot with the cast of Glee. And Jane Lynch comes in and says, how would you guys like to do a car commercial? And they're all like, really? You know, Okay, in the actual Glee telecast, there's a follow-up to that commercial, and what it is a dream sequence of, and it's fabulous, I got to tell you. It's all white background. All the Glee people are dressed in white, and they do See the USA in Chevrolet.
Really?
Oh, interesting. And it is off the charts. Very enjoyable. Hmm. Very well done.
Fourth quarter, huh? Hmm.
Well, no. In the actual See the USA is in the show.
Ah.
Glee is following.
Really?
Glee is following the Super Bowl.
Oh, okay.
So they're
going to
tease the spot in the fourth quarter.
Gotcha.
And then if you watch the show, you'll see the spot. It's great. I got to tell you.
Well, let me finish the Cruise ad because it comes with a 6-speed manual or 6-speed automatic, Pioneer Premium 9-speaker sound system, more cargo or passenger room than the Civic, Corolla, or Focus, better highway manual transmission fuel economy than Civic, Corolla, or Focus. And you can check it all out at Chevrolet.com/cruise, and that's C-R-U-Z-E. Okay, now what do we talk about?
Jen, tell us what you've been up.
Yeah. And well, first we should explain a little bit of your background.
He made B-2 bombers in his basement.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
He was on the B-2 bombers.
The wagons, bombers.
It was the same. Also, mm-hmm. What, the first operating officer or marketing officer for No Fear?
Oh, yeah, No Fear was great. Being on the fast track at GM and Hughes Aircraft and then jumping off the fast track and selling T-shirts. But it was the right thing to do at the time. Totally
to this
fun.
Day, one of the coolest things I've ever seen was before the Indy 500.
You remember that?
When the B-2 came over.
Oh, wow.
And I got to tell you, first of all, you don't hear it.
Nope.
You see it. I just happened to look, and I said, you know, and you see it, and it comes up. Man, that thing is just unbelievable.
It is. It's still advanced. It goes back to the 80s, actually designed in 1980.
That is unreal.
And when you pull out of the Century Bowl, you've been to LAX. Pull out of LAX, there's the Hilton Hotel there.
Yeah.
The B-2, the proposal was designed and delivered in that building, and the Hilton was built around it.
So it was like a skunk works in the middle of the
skunk
hotel?
Skunk works. It was the jet wash from the jets, literally right there, and moved several times around because of the secrecy, but that's where it originated. And Jack Northrop was getting up in age, and he had his Alzheimer's, but he had his faculties enough. They gave him a model of it, wheeled him in, and big smile on his face.
Yeah, because it was...
Saw the resurrection of the YB-49.
Yeah, and they did a great documentary about it.
Now, wait a minute. Back up. The YB-49, is that the flying wing?
That was the flying wing in the 40s. That politics.
Politics killed it, but it was absolutely sensational.
Way too far ahead of us. You know, it's just as bad to be too far ahead sometimes as too far behind.
Yeah.
But without fly-by-wire, and back then, the thing was unstable. You know, there weren't any computers. Had the computing power.
One of those, too. I just read a bunch of stuff.
M91M. A lot of... Well, I'm a strong believer in ancient aliens. Helped out a lot of folks. The Bhagavad Gita, I think it's called in India, Sanskrit. But I believe a lot of that technology came over after World War II.
Yeah.
Yep. Between Russia and the United States, But Jack Northrop is the father of the flying wing, and that was the originator. Yeah, no doubt about it.
So
and that
now
thing
you're
is still state of the art.
And now you're at SEMA.
Yep.
Doing what?
B-2 bombers. Yeah. No. SEMA. SEMA is all about basically. It's basically all the stuff you don't need, but everything you want. And it's the high margin side of the aftermarket. You know, it's the performance aftermarket, specialty equipment. It's still living true.
And you're what? You're the vice president of vehicle technology.
Vice president
technology?
Of vehicle technology.
What does that mean?
It's a position created by the board. There were several very creative, visionary board members, along with our CEO, Chris Kirsting, that said, hey, 5 years ago, the future of customization is going to be wrapped up in technology. And technology, you know, it's disruptive just by nature. It's inherently disruptive. That can be a threat or it can be a challenge or it can be an opportunity. And so they wanted to get out in front of it and bring this technology back into the aftermarket and say, okay, what are the opportunities? How can we handle some of that? And that's what we've done in the last 5 years. And it's a cross-functional. We got some great partners with DSpace, CarSim here in Ann Arbor, that are really developing solutions that are affordable to the aftermarket. I mean, these guys don't have proving grounds. These guys don't have testing facilities. But basically, they're mom-and-pop organizations with lots of big ideas. And they want to get out there and test out their stuff. They want to simulate the vehicle dynamics, things of that sort, and get that out to the SEMA show.
So you're working with the car companies to be able to provide technological data to these people?
Absolutely. In some cases, it's a collaboration, like between Ford, DSpace, and SEMA. We've got a lot going on in electronic stability control. So, you know, what are the characteristics or vehicle dynamics of an aftermarket modified vehicle? You put a 6-inch lift kit on it from Superlift. How does the ESC operate?
Big tires and wheels, within, yeah.
Absolutely.
And that changes everything in terms of stability control, anti-lock brakes.
Absolutely. It's kind of like Ralph Gill says, a car or a truck's got to have good bones. How good are those bones from a technical perspective? This is a way to simulate that. And again, it's at affordable prices for the SEMA market. Again, that's what we're after. Again, having access to places like Clemson's University.
Yeah, tell us about that, Clemson. That's pretty cool.
Oh, CUICAR is the acronym. It's Clemson University International Center for Automotive Research. That's a mouthful. But it is state of the art. It's beyond state of the art. They got 110 or 111 master's and PhD students down there. It's only PhD that I know of in automotive engineering.
Wait, say that again, because that's an amazing
statistic. PhD, doctorate in automotive engineering.
In South Carolina.
Of any school in the world. The only place that you can get a PhD in automotive engineering.
You couldn't get it at the old GMI?
I don't think. No. There's master's. I don't even think they have master's. I think it's graduate program.
Of course, it doesn't exist anymore.
Yeah.
Well, it's Kettering University now.
And this is way beyond. They've got a quarter of $1 billion of equipment and donations. BMW, Michelin, Timken. A lot of great partners that with the equipment and the endowments. Two great professors there, Dr. MTS Hock and Dr. Paul Van Hovens.
Yeah, I know. Scott Atherton's great. Been trying to get me to. We should go down there and do a show from there.
Let's do it. That'd be way cool. I'd love to do that.
And way out of the box thing. They got a program, annual program, called Deep Orange. Deep for the deep thinking, orange because CUICAR's color is orange, and orange is basically an international color.
Well, that's also Clemson's.
Exactly, they got the big ball. And this is all graduate program. They built a great research center there, but it's hands-on stuff.
Well, explain. You know, give us some examples of what Deep Orange has produced.
Deep Orange, they took a 1 Series BMW. They got from Munich. I don't think it's sold here in the States.
Yeah.
Is it? Okay.
One is now. Yeah.
Yep.
They gutted it. Put into a plug-in electric. They stuck a BMW motorcycle engine in it for the range extender. Some of the criteria is like 20 miles on the electric and then 400 range on the range extender. There's basically four areas that they really pushed it. One was the interior is done by a company called Industrial Origami and the students. So almost all folded together. Less welding, all those types of things, again, made into the electric. And then the interior, they worked with Forcia to tether the seats to the roof structure and to the floor so it rides the pulse.
Oh, my God, what a great idea.
Almost like a Hans device. Very, very, very cool. And that was really cool. They worked with Dell, and they took the Android operating system that powers the interior and all the infotainment and all the diagnostics for the car.
So you're getting into everything, dynamics, construction, electronics.
And it's gorgeous. If you go out to Clemson University or just Google Deep Orange, Art Center did the design. CUICAR did the engineering. They brought it out to SEMA. It was a hit with lots of our members. Lots of folks saw it. Matter of fact, it was one of the hits of the SEMA banquet on Thursday night. Very, very cool. I mean, where are you getting that hands-on? To me, it's like taking the book smarts that they have in the universities and matching that up with the street smarts, people that know what they're doing, to make it cool. And to me, that's one of the biggest things with electric vehicles. You got to make them cool.
You have to.
The old Yogi Berra's. If people don't want to buy electric cars, nothing's going to stop them, right? You got to want to have them, as Don Runkle used to say. You got to want to do it. You got to want to buy them. That want to just isn't there yet.
No, it's not. Peter, you've talked, going back to your hydrogen racing concept.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, that was 4 years ago, January.
Ahead of its time.
Yeah. Well, you know.
They're calling you Jack Northrop, Peter DeLevin.
Yeah. Right. Well, you know.
Well, the concept, basically, it was, you know, the Hydrogen Electric Racing Federation, the concept was basically electric cars at Indy. Powered by hydrogen fuel cells, because if you are going to, and I don't care what it is, whatever the technology is, racing will shrink the development time, will make it lighter, faster, more efficient, whatever. So all the problems in electric cars, the heat generated, the switching of the batteries, the recharging, onboard fuel storage, if it's hydrogen or whatever, would have pushed it all forward.
Yep. Yep.
And it would have opened up a new era at the Speedway where people, the SEMA members, would come up with an idea. Because there are smoky Unix out there.
Absolutely.
But they're everywhere.
Yep. Yep. Right.
They're in their garages. So, you know, and what I wanted Tony George to do at the time, who was running the Speedway, is just say, look, do an experimental class or do an experimental race, and the only rule you have is a dimensional box, and it has to be electric or hydrogen powered, and let everyone else do what they're going to do.
And get away from the spec racing. Get it out there.
Right. Yeah.
Say this is the Formula One of electric.
I'm somewhat encouraged though about 2012. I think it's going to be pretty good, but it's not the step I wanted.
Well,
I wanted them to just go for it.
Right.
Because way back when, the Speedway was, you know, they pioneered a lot of production stuff.
Yep.
You know, the first rearview mirror
right.
eliminated
exactly,
the riding mechanic.
Yeah.
Gee, that's just...
Got rid of 150 pounds
right
there. Yeah,
just like that.
Right. Too bad there's not a...
So, I mean, if you said, okay, you can run whatever you have in the race, but you have to figure out, you know, you want to go fast? Fine, then you're going to have to recharge it. And, you know, in the run-up to HRF, to the meeting that we had, the GM engineers were always said, oh, well, we won't recharge. We'll just swap the batteries mm-hmm. in and out. Mm-hmm. When it comes into pits, we'll pull the batteries out and put a new pack
Imagine
in.
Imagine the technology to be able to do that.
And
where
would
we be today?
It already started before they even, but, you know, and then Toyota was into it, and then the budget, the economy started to go, and they just said, oh, we got no money.
I'd say resurrect that idea. You know, it's not dead and buried. Bring it back out.
Well, official name of HRF has been changed to ERF. It's Electric Racing Federation. So we'll see. I'm working on some more things.
Good. We need. You remember Azhar Hussain, the father, or the guy that founded the TTXGP, which is basically electric bike series.
Right.
He said he had a very profound statement. He made it here in Detroit a couple years ago. The fastest way to advance technology is either war or racing.
Or motor.
He says, let's go with racing. And competition drives people together.
Right.
And you get the best out of her.
And
official.
You solve the problems.
Yep.
You know, all the problems we have electric cars. I mean, you race them all of a sudden. Wow, they're going farther on their batteries and they're going faster. You shrink, you know.
Yeah, maybe, although the space program is another one that's pretty good at that sort of thing. And they took a whack at batteries for, how many decades? And we're still kind of where we are. So I'm maybe not quite as bullish that racing or anything is going to, you know, produce a miracle battery.
Why my suggestion is actually call it Formula None. There are no rules. Except with one exception, the cocoon that would protect the driver. That's the only specification.
Yeah.
Other than that, if you want one, whatever.
You've got this many kilowatt hours to work with. Whatever, that's how much you get
that's
to
still
have.
Limiting.
Well, I like the dimensional box in that way, as long as you can drive it in, because I don't want a minivan at the Speedway loaded up with...
You don't want science experiments and things like that. I mean, it's like, I thought I had a Sputnik moment last week, but it was just gas. It really didn't help. But,
there were a couple of electric car races that ended kind of disastrously with green smoke coming out of batteries that blew up that were kind of acrid and deadly. I think some people go, whether or not...
It's the stuff, you know, but unless you do it, you're not going to...
Yeah.
Figure it out.
You know, and it's not just the powertrain development there.
It's the whole pack.
Ray LaHood, Secretary LaHood, announced last week the Connected Car Challenge to get it out there. And if you employ the aftermarket involved in some of these decisions, we can get to a critical mass of connected vehicles 15 years sooner than just relying on the OEMs alone. So he's got a Connected Car Challenge out there.
Well, it doesn't work at all without that. I mean,
absolutely.
It's totally worthless if... You know, the 20,000 expensive cars are talking to each other, and, you know, 15 million of them are running on in between. You've got to have the apply 12 volts, and here's at least, here I am, here's how fast I'm going from everybody.
Right, and a Ford can talk to a Ford, Chevy can talk to a Chevy. How do you get a Ford to talk to a Toyota, to a Chevy?
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's right.
We talked about this when GM did the V2V things.
Yeah.
You have like a license plate frame. Just you put 12 volts from the, from the taillights or whatever, and that thing just says, here I am, here I am, here I am. Mm-hmm. And at least you know there is a car that stopped and
right.
what, you know.
Right. Yeah, and there's a savings of 40,000 lives a year due to, like, some of the vehicle dynamics. $200 billion or something like that in societal costs. Wasted time on freeways, you know, with congestion and traffic and all that kind of stuff. What a great way to get some of this money back.
Could be huge. Hey, but let's take another quick break here because we also have to thank Bridgestone Tire for having sponsored this show. One of the things I want to talk about, and check it out at BridgestoneTire.com, is I've been test driving a Mazda Speed 3 this week, and I thought, uh-oh, this is going to be terrible in the snow because it's got low-profile tires. Well, I checked a little bit closer, and boy, these tires had, like, cleats on them. They're Bridgestone Blizzaks. I could get through anything with this, this car. And I know people say, oh, it's front-wheel drive. Believe me, I've been in plenty of front-wheel drive cars that don't get through the snow. So I just wanted to take the moment to say Bridgestone Blizzaks on a Mazda Speed 3 got me through all the snow this
week. That's the Xerox of winter tires, really, Blizzak. Right. Everyone knows
Blizzak. There's the brand.
So check it out at BridgestoneTire.com, and as they say, it's Bridgestone or nothing.
No, we're talking to the competition there in the for the connected car. A lot of talk about the distracted driving, right?
Yeah.
I was with a group of Gen Y, and I guess the next generation called Gen Green is coming. And
I've never heard that term before.
No, that's a new one on me, too.
First I heard it was at the Washington Auto Show from IHS.
Being born now?
16 and under.
Oh, really?
16 and under now, you're basically Gen Green. But the coolest, some of these Gen Y folks I was talking at iCar and picked up on after that was driving is becoming the distraction to them. If they go off the grid for, if you say so, okay, to these kids, particularly Jen Green, that you have to go off the grid, you can't be in touch with your friends for the next 2 hours while you're in the car.
Then they won't go.
They won't. Exactly. And it's kind of, I call it the Jurassic Park syndrome. They'll find a way. And if they don't find a way to put it in the car, someone will meet that need, but they'll go mass transit.
That goes back to John's point. The guided cars in the urban areas.
Autonomous cars,
right?
Self-driving.
Cars. Yeah. I mean, you're right in that respect, John, because, you know, there's a new generation that don't care about driving.
Exactly. And this is a generation that the designated driver, they do this stuff.
They do.
And if they had to have a designated driver, well, they could all stay on the grid. They're going to do it. So but this whole idea of deactivating your phone once the car's on or something like that.
Well, this is a bunch of crap anyway, because over 10 years ago, I interviewed a guy at UMTRI, University of Michigan Transportation Research Institute. Okay, his name's Paul Green. And he was talking to me back 10 years ago why cell phones were a problem in a car. But he explained why here's why it's different talking to somebody in the front seat with you versus talking to somebody on the phone. He says, somebody in the front seat sees you're about to hit something, they shut up. Or they see that you're going to do something complicated, they shut up. They see that or feel that you're
or they yell at you.
Yeah.
Right. What the hell?
Yeah, I'll bet you we could go back to 1933 when the first radio came out.
Oh, car radios. They thought that was...
You can't listen to a radio while you drive.
Yeah. Listen, I can absolutely point you to those articles. When Motorola first came out with radios in cars in 1930, all the editorials at the time were, you can't listen to the radio and drive a car. It's too distracting.
Of course, the cars were a little more of a handful back then. They might have had a little bit of a point. But,
but anyway, what Paul Green said is what the cell phone guys got to do is hook up with the car companies. So if you put on your turn signal, the person on the other end of the line can hear your turn signal's on. They know that you're going to make a turn. Or if you're braking at X G's or fractions of a G, or if your yaw rate exceeds a given amount, the phone cuts out or it sends a signal to the person that I'm busy right now, just shut up, as if they're sitting in the front seat with you.
You got it.
And why Ray LaHood is saying we're going to ban all cell phones is, to me, it's nuts. And
you can't.
You're not going to get that toothpaste back in the tube. You know, you're just not going to.
Right, yeah.
But that's, what he wants to do. And the other thing, Chris.
I think Ray needs to talk every fifth thought, maybe tenth thought.
But here's the other thing is, okay, all these distractions are coming into cars. and we're talking about how distracted driving is such a big problem. Well, then explain why we've seen the biggest drop-off in traffic fatalities in the history of the automobile. The last 2 years, it's fallen by...
The numbers are not cooperating with the speed kills people and the...
Well, it's definitely due to active-passive safety integration. You know, the things like electronic stability control, rollover control.
Well, I think that's a big part. I still think the recession is the biggest part of all. I still say... People are driving less, right? So many people are out of work.
But you're supposed to be looking at the per passenger mile number, and those are down, too. So that doesn't really...
Well, I think that's what ties into what John's talking about, too. I do believe stability control next to the seatbelt is going to prove awesome.
Absolutely, biggest thing. And that's just the tip of the iceberg. Well, lane departure control, adaptive cruise control, all these other technologies coming. Yeah, it's disruptive. It can be intimidating. But as a driver... You may not want it, and you can pretty much outperform it. But don't you want that guy behind it that's barreling behind you? Don't you want him to have it? What about for your kids?
Yeah, but you know what? I don't know. An analogy to me is kind of like spell check. If you don't know how to spell, spell check really doesn't help you out very much, does it? If you can't drive worth a shit, I don't care what technology you have, you're going to drive through somebody, you know, inevitably.
Yeah. I thought spell check was like an executive assistant something like that.
Well, I don't know. I'm a pretty good speller, and I still like spell check because...
I'm not saying I don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
It's not going to improve your spell.
It's not going to improve your...
It's a crutch.
I mean, if you can't drive or don't have a feel for it, or you had to be forced to drag down to the DMV to get your license because you were 21 and hadn't gotten it yet, I mean, you're not going to be an instant, you know, great driver. I mean, I'm afraid we've got detached people. So autonomous cars, yes, I think we're going to go there. As long as I can remove myself from the grid, I'll be fine.
Yeah. Peter, this is what's going to be brilliant about autonomous cars is all the crummy drivers are going to have autonomous cars.
They'll be
going to open up the roads for the rest of us.
Yeah, they'll be in the pod lanes, and then we can be in the orange lane or whatever.
Well, and I've talked about this before, and I'm dead serious about it. We should be setting a goal of raising the speed limit to 150 miles an hour with no back-off in fuel economy or safety. That should be the
goal. There's a challenge.
Now, there's the goal that Ackerson should be talking about with his people. That's a stretch goal.
Shit, don't tell Dan that. He'll come in Monday. Here's what we're going to do.
Yeah. Make it just happen. Like I wish the airlines would work on making the planes go faster instead of cramming, you know, more hundreds of people on them.
Well, look, you know, I'm a big one on that, too.
We've lost the ability to go Mach. Come on.
Yeah, we can do it, but technically.
Yeah, but there isn't one that you can. I can't climb on an airplane and go Mach, you know.
Well, jet planes today are flying no faster than they did in 1960.
Slower.
Yep.
In 1960, so 50 years later, we've made no improvement at all. Mm-hmm. And with the automobile, it's even worse. We've made no improvement in terms of travel since the 1950s.
And the Concorde was developed with old technology. If you do new technology now, but nobody wants to pay for it.
This is true. Okay, let's do one more ad here, and then we're going to get to rapid fire. And what we want to talk about right now is DowAerify.com. And, of course, this is their breakthrough particulate filter for diesels. In fact, they're going to be building them right here in the state of Michigan and exporting them all around the world, which I think is kind of cool. But it's low pressure. You can downsize it for small cars. You can upsize it all the way to Class 8 trucks. And that's where a lot of this is going to be used, is in off-road and the big on-road trucks. Pretty interesting technology that they've got it. Check it out at DowAerify.com. And Aerify is AERIFY. Pretty cool technology.
You sure about that? We better spell check that.
Too true.
Ben, let's go to rapid fire. Well, we used to have a soundtrack that went with it, too, Flight of the Valkyries. But then we realized, whoops, we don't have the rights to that music, so we're not playing that. We just have the machine gun
running. It's not public by now? Jeez.
Well, not what we had, at least.
Nice.
Okay, here we go. This goes to Frank from Unsprung. Says, question for the Motor Trend guy. What's he think of Hurst buying Car and Driver and Road and Track?
Well, I mean, I still have a lot of pals over there at my alma mater, and I hope it's good news. They're American anyway, right? The French are out of the picture. They don't seem to think it's going to be a problem. We are kind of wondering, do they want to be in the car magazine business, or are they going to spiff them up and sell them on? Who knows?
I don't know. In my experience, when one media company buys another media company, it never turns out.
Don't dance in the streets.
If you're making money, all they want to do is milk the cash and throw it into something else.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Gulch. Jeremy wants to know, and this is for you, John, please and for Peter, too, please address the state of racing green initiatives, ALMS, TTXGP, and NASCAR delaying the intro of fuel injection.
Well, let's set NASCAR on the shelf.
Yeah.
I think ALMS is, the good thing about ALMS is they're willing to, Scott Atherton was at the Hydrogen Electric Racing Federation meeting, John, and he, from that day forward, said, I'm changing the ALMS direction. And ever since, they are the most happening thing.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And combined with Le Mans, where they have this high performance with high efficiency, I think we're gaining on it a little bit. I think you're going to see more things happening. But, everyone wishes NASCAR would just do more.
You just look at the tagline for ALMS, getting to tomorrow faster.
Oh, I love that. I hadn't
Doesn't
heard
that.
Oh, God, I love
and,
that.
And you look at
that
what they're
the
doing. Absolutely. And pushing that envelope and making it very much technology-driven. That's what they want. And demonstrating that, I think it's the most relevant racing series in the world.
NASCAR's? What's wrong with yesterday? Dang it.
And more shameless promotion.
That's great.
Dow Aerify's particulate filter debuted on the ALMS series.
Wow.
The Audi diesel race car.
Peugeot just introduced their new 908, and it's a V8 diesel instead of a V12.
You know, and you look at what Honda has done. Look what Audi did with ALMS.
Well, Audi's,
look at this stuff. They proved it there. They got it in production.
Okay, speaking of V8s, Jesus Chrysler wants to know, Lincoln's head of product recently said there will be no V8s in future Lincolns now being developed. He asks, how can you have a BMW, Mercedes, Lexus fighter without a V8? Is Lincoln going to compete with Mercedes, BMW, and Lexus? How do they market it with two less cylinders, regardless of turbos or blowers?
I don't think they're going to have to worry too much about it. Those guys are all downsizing, too. EcoBoost, they got out in front with that.
Yeah.
You know, right now, I'll tell you, the 7 Series with the twin-turbo 6 is my favorite one of those.
It is. It's very good.
It's nice.
And BMW's bringing back the 4-cylinder, which, hallelujah, is huge news.
They're thinking 4-cylinder S-classes. I mean,
yeah.
Maybe coming here. They have them already, I think,
yeah,
over there.
So I don't think that's going to be an issue.
Right. In fact, Ward's just ran a thing that V8 penetration, i.e. sales rate in the U.S. is at its all-time lowest ever. And it was only like in pass cars, 5.7%,
yeah.
Less than 6% of all pass cars.
It's going to keep going down.
Sure.
Trucks still higher. But yeah, I think what it really comes down to is, look, I love V8s. I love the sound of the exhaust note of a V8.
You can have that.
But
you can synthesize it.
Well, you can. You can synthesize it. But at the end of the day, for me, it's all power to weight ratio.
Yeah.
And as long as the engine's smooth, I don't care how the job gets done.
Yeah.
Jeremy Byrne, all right. John W. and Peter, what about green racing?
It's the future. I mean, it's going to happen.
It's going to happen. I think what you're going to see eventually is it's really going to originate at Le Mans. I wanted it to originate at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Mm-hmm.
But I think Le Mans is going to keep pressing the envelope. They're going to be, you know, eventually there's going to be a mileage minimum requirement, and they'll get there. I wanted that to be at the Speedway.
I'm with you.
You know, 10 miles per gallon for 2 years, 15 miles per gallon after 5 years. I want someone to average 180 miles an hour to win the Indy 500 and get 20 miles per gallon doing it.
Yep.
That's what I want to see. And if you'd throw away all the other rules and say, okay, you got to get this much mileage.
Except we also need to stop talking about miles in the numerator,
right,
gallon in the denominator. We got to swap that around.
Yeah, it's got to be energy used or whatever.
Yeah,
so
if
you want to put butanol cornflakes in your car, then have at it. You know,
that protocol, ALMS, you know, Scott Atherton, the guys in SA, they put all that together.
Yeah.
The other, I want to make a point there about, you know, yes, it's the future, but the internal combustion engine is going to be around for another 20 years.
Long way.
And it's going to be cool with EcoBoost, GDI, all that cool stuff. We're going to see great strides in that. So they're going to coexist.
Yeah.
Well, I've always said that, you know, when they really do let us see what they found in Roswell, And we take that flying saucer apart, there's going to be a small block at the heart of it.
Or an OPOC, at least.
Wow, that's a great history. I want to see that episode.
George from Brooklyn says, question for the panel. What do you think of the most recent Chrysler sales figures? Well, if you didn't see, Chrysler had the best month of all the major car companies. They were up something like 24%. They had a whale of a month.
Helped a lot by how low they were a year ago, I think.
Yeah, I know, but I still say...
I wish them the best. However, I think they've got major, major problems ahead with the launch of the 500.
Really?
Yeah. Hmm.
Well, I think they have an issue setting up their dealership network.
Well, and, you know, the initial batch are all manuals, which is great because that's what they should be. Mm-hmm. But it's hard to be the cult car in L.A. with a manual.
Or anywhere in the U.S.
With
right.
the traffic in L.A., yeah. you know.
Here's one that says, not a rapid-fire question. I'd like John to expand on the ongoing material cost and the price wars between automakers. This is something that we've been covering in daily. Steel prices are skyrocketing. Rubber prices are skyrocketing. Copper, palladium, platinum, everything's going through the roof.
What did we say a few years ago? That people don't understand how much cars are going to cost.
Right, exactly.
It's all this technology and all these mileage requirements, diminishing precious metals, all that stuff. I mean, you know, you're going to be paying $30,000 for your Fiesta in no time.
And you're going to put 200,000 miles on it.
That's exactly mm-hmm. true, too. But... You know, I think this is part of the explanation of what happened to Ford's profits in the fourth quarter. I think skyrocketing material costs everywhere in the world, which is something that they broke out in their financial report. You know, North America, South America, Europe, Asia Pacific, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. Material cost was one of the things that they cited as to why their profitability was down. I think it played yep. a big role.
Yeah, I agree.
Not to mention shortages of parts with parts plants closing.
Right.
Because the suppliers right. wound down and they can't ramp up fast enough.
Yeah. That's right. That's going to be an issue, and that's why we're not going to hit this very optimistic SAR rate by the end of the year some people are predicting.
I don't see that. I point out, I just don't. To me, it's like a Nike curve. This is going to take a long time to get back up to 14, 15
yep.
million SAR. I don't see it happening in 2 years. Not at all. I think it's going to be good, but it's going to be a long, long swoosh
mm-hmm.
recovery.
Mm-hmm. John Wills says, how much longer before we see a restyled Lincoln brand? And do you think the brand can survive on common global platforms, or does Lincoln need its own unique design?
We'll start to see what Lincoln's up to
next year, right?
A year from now.
Yeah.
They'll tease it.
They've got a new baby Lincoln coming, right? They've got...
The new MKZ.
New MKZ. There's talk of an MKC... coming off the Fiesta platform.
Well, that concept yeah. Freeman Thomas showed a few years ago, the green.
Right.
People are, you know, just be patient. Lincoln's got some great stuff coming. Mm-hmm. I don't think the global platform's going to hurt them at all.
But I like what Frank's saying of rear-wheel drive.
I think they've got that message.
Roger Will wants to know, how long does Dan Ackerson have before he is broomed?
Well, see, that's an issue, because if the board... who put him there is still there, then they might just, you know, skip down the road together until it crashes.
Yeah, I don't think
Who's going to broom him? Nobody's going to
broom
him.
His pals on the board? No, they're the ones who put him in.
Yeah. Exactly.
That would be an admission that they made a mistake.
Yeah.
Ain't
going to
happen. Right. Glenn E. asks, is the Cruise hatchback coming to the U.S.?
People don't like hatchbacks here.
Well, you keep reading stories that we're all of a sudden going to start to be enamored of hatches.
Well, the only way Maybe. People buy hatches when they don't look like them, so
yeah.
I don't know about that.
And when you're small enough, I mean, Fiestas, yeah, okay, great, because that's a great way to get a real back seat. You know, the roof comes back and, you know, just cut off the back. Fine, but...
And it looks better, to my eye. The Fiesta hatch and even the Focus hatch look better than the sedan. But that's my eye. I don't know if that's the typical American look to it. Hmm. The only way I see Americans going to hatches is if we become more like Europe, i.e. car prices are far higher than they are right now, and we become one-car families again or households. And so we need one car that can do it all, and the hatchback is a lot more versatile.
Drive to the utility of it.
Right. Hey, Ben, let's bring in I know we got some phone calls here.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. My question is for Peter this week. In regards to his recent commentaries about Lieutenant Dan and his quote-unquote wisdom, I was just wondering, has Peter ever been banned from the General Motors properties or anything like that because he doesn't necessarily say flattering things about the management? Or is there any concern of him that Lieutenant Dan may actually try to ban him from the General Motors facilities and contact with any employees at GM? Thanks. Bye.
I'm not concerned about it. I've got plenty of old friends at General Motors. And, if he can't take tough commentary, then you got a problem. Mm-hmm. So I know I'm not well-liked in certain quarters of General Motors, but I've got a lot of friends in the upper echelons of the company who, no problem.
And even though we just said that Ackerson's unlikely to be broomed, Peter DeLorenzo is going to be along a lot longer commenting on this business than Van Ackerson's going to be around working in it. I guarantee you that.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Okay, Ben, let's bring in another call.
Hey, Don, Rick from San Diego. Hey, you guys brought back some memories for me from working on the old N-14 in the secret city at Northrop, and it was good times.
Yes.
But back on the auto scene, I think Mahalio is going to do very well. I mean, the background of Boeing sets him up perfectly. The other side, Ackerson, general management, here we come. On the sales front, did you guys notice the kind of change from out of the midsize car to the smaller car and the small SUVs? Comments, please. Thanks.
Yeah, in fact, the small cars lost market share. Hybrids lost market share. I'm talking last month, the most recent sales numbers, even though gas prices have been inching up, crossovers are off to the races. And there's small crossovers and big crossovers, but people seem to be getting out of their more traditional SUVs and going to crossovers. They're not going to compact cars.
Right.
And actually, luxury SUVs, big ones, had a whopping good month, and full-size pickups did really well, too. It's the big stuff that's gaining market share.
The GMC, basically all trucks and SUVs and crossovers,
at least for a while,
outsold all the hybrids combined of everybody.
So we'll see what happens when gas goes up to $4 a gallon. Yeah. Maybe people just say, eh, and it won't be the big shock like it was.
Right.
That magic number used to be $3.25 a gallon. That was Jim Farley. And saw the immediate change. You're right. Maybe it's $4 now, but what's it going to take for that tipping point to happen again?
Hasn't happened yet.
Nope.
Hasn't happened
yet.
And
we're about $3.25 a gallon now.
Next summer, everyone says, wait till summer.
Here's a good question. Goggles Pisano says, there was a dude who won $70 million in the Mega Millions lottery and decided to start his own Camping World Series truck racing team. If $70 million landed in your laps, what would you blow it on racing-wise?
Ooh.
Well, number one is I would buy myself a seat because I want to go racing. I don't want to run a team.
Yeah. If you want a glass of milk, you don't need to buy a dairy farm. Literally, go have some fun, rent a car.
You do a lot of motocross.
No, I don't even. My boys did. Yeah.
Okay. I'd probably use the money beat on doors and try to establish a new racing team.
Yeah.
What racing series?
Hydrogen electric.
Yeah.
Well, somewhere where you could push the envelope, so it would have to be Le Mans racing, unless IndyCar really embraces me and say, yeah, if you show up with something, you can run it, you know?
That's a good point. With $70 million, I mean, you could literally Dodge Motorsports. The Ralph Gilles and Brian Vigier started a Dodge Motorsports Supercross team. Literally, and they led the first lap of the season at Anaheim on January 8th, I think it was. And they can own that series as opposed to jumping into being a small fish in a bigger pond. And that lifestyle is really what they're after.
Or I might just call Roger and say, Roger, I want to see Auto Extremis on the end plate of your IndyCar wings. How much?
Yeah.
Yeah, in fact, you could probably buy 10 years' worth of that for $70 million.
I wouldn't blow all $70 million. I mean, I got to have my...
Well, Roger had a great quote. He says, the fastest way to make $1 million in racing, or $70 million?
Start with
$1 million or $70 million.
Start with $10 million.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Jay Cujo wants to know, does anyone think that GM will get back to number one this year? I think it's entirely possible. Really? They were hot on Toyota still number one in the world.
What happened to China?
And it was only like 40,000 units difference, yeah. I think, between GM and Toyota. And that's when I went, hello.
I'll tell you that GM, I think it's more likely that GM beats Toyota this year than it is that Volkswagen beats them all in 2018 or whatever.
Yeah. Well, here's the only thing about Volkswagen is it's scary, the numbers that they say they're committing to new product development. Yeah.
They're going to show seven concept cars at Geneva.
At Geneva, mm-hmm. Right. So I think they're committing, I want to say, $10 billion a year for the next 4 years. That is substantially more than GM or Toyota are putting up, or anybody else for that
matter. Yeah, they want to bury everybody. But I got to tell you, that third generation 1 liter car, it's very cool.
It is very cool, but it's a 2-seater. And as cool as it is, it just isn't going to sell much. But I do agree that it is pretty cool. Okay, Ben, I see we've got another call. Well, let's bring him in.
Yes, my name's Larry from Northwest Pennsylvania. My comment is to Mark. Motor Trend. I've had a subscription to Motor Trend for 40 years, but after receiving my last Motor Trend, seeing the Chevrolet Bolt was car of the year, I called and canceled my subscription. I don't consider the Bolt a car of the year. I consider it just a electric car. It should be in Popular Mechanics or Popular Science, not for Motor Trend. I just can't seem to that I'm getting your magazine anymore because of failure.
I'm just curious if you would think the same thing if General Motors hadn't gotten money from, you know, Obama Motors and so forth. I'm just almost 90% of the angry emails and by God, I'm never buying another. It was from people that you could quite clearly see that it was a political thing. And I don't know how you, we didn't, you know, voted in based on anything to do with that kind of stuff. So there's no defending against it, you know. Half the time when I get those, I want to say, and don't let us catch you looking at it on the newsstand either.
Well, you know, I'm on the North American Car of the Year Award, and we gave it to the Volt. And, you know, that's 50 journalists, men and women, Canadian and American.
Probably some Republicans and some Democrats.
You know, newsprint guys, broadcast guys, enthusiasts, guys and gals, I should say. I mean, so all different people, and we voted for the Volt as Car of the Year, and it wasn't even close.
Yeah.
The Nissan Leaf and the Hyundai Sonata were also on the list, both of which I think are very good cars, too. But the Volt, far and away by all these people, was number one.
Yeah, you know, people keep saying, it doesn't stir anyone's soul. You know, it's not the Car of the Year that'll make you the most fun to drive. It's not the Car of the Year that is the, you know, the best possible use of your money. It's not, you know, it's everything kind of wrapped up together. This car is the most important new car that moves the ball of car making forward the most. Sorry.
Yeah.
For Mr. Warniak from Avis 9, will SEMA become increasingly tech-oriented in the future, integrating smartphones, et cetera?
Absolutely. Smarter phones are making smarter cars. There's no doubt about that. And the technology that's in your car has to be connected. By the year 2016, something like that, 70% of consumer electronics are going to be integrated with the web. The internet. How many of those are going to be in your car? It's got to happen. So.
As long as SEMA doesn't lose their march to a different drummer persona, they'll be okay.
Yeah, I want to make a great distinction there is, yes, consumer vehicle electrification and vehicle connectivity, two of the biggest driving forces there. But SEMA is not the consumer electronics show. That's all about technology. SEMA is all about the lifestyle, and particularly the automotive lifestyle. How they come together. Yes, there's a bit of an overlap, but SEMA's mojo is the car and the enthusiast around that lifestyle.
It's still about the emotional connection.
Absolutely.
But enthusiast connection, not, you know, tech connection.
Yeah. Right. It's where CES or CEA is technology enthusiast, SEMA is still the automotive enthusiast. Yeah. And that spirit is still alive. And I saw down at Clemson. You guys see it around. There's still a lot of it. It's not as prevalent as used to be, but it's still alive and doing well.
Okay, TJ Martin wants to know, Peter, those auto extremist sweatshirts we asked about, any chance of those becoming available anytime soon? Sign me up if they do.
Well, on our website, if you look closely, you can order shirts.
And that and website hats. Again is?
That's autoextremist.com. Yes, you can go to the website and order.
But you want the sweatshirt.
Well, we have sweatshirts.
Okay.
We have sweatshirts, we have hats, and we're gonna ramp up some new stuff for the spring.
Joseph says, can you guys comment on Sergio Marchionne's long-term make-or-break strategy regarding engines? Fiat is planning a future of diesel and CNG, no EV at all. Since planet Earth is bursting with natural gas, I think he'll probably be right. That is true. They don't seem to be going to anything with electric at all.
You know, and I mean, natural gas is it's essential to electric. But I mean, you have an electric car if you have a CNG car, because you can't carry enough on board to get you any farther than a battery would get you. So the same people who can buy electric cars, and it's fussy, they find. You can't take a trip across country in a CNG car very easily like you can an electric one. They're great for commuting. Tons of people can use them for commuting. I'm all for that. But
yeah, well, one thing that Fiat does have is what they call bi-fuel that will run on natural gas and or gasoline. And so that seems to be a reasonable approach.
But that's a good analogy, Frank. I mean, having a CNG car is like having an electric car.
It really is.
I mean, I can tell you the range anxiety. Todd Lassa goes to the one place that one of the five places in Metro Detroit is closed. He's like, you got to find me the next closest, and I hope I can make it. You know.
What do you got to go to get like these Rhino places where you pick up?
You go to Consumers Energy.
Yeah.
You know, inside a fence and talk to somebody. Oh, it's ridiculous. Huh. You buy them and you put a filling thing in your house is how you do it.
So we're back. You know, those pig tanks in front of everyone's home again.
Yeah. I mean, the gas that comes into your house and runs your heater and so forth will fill your car up. It's just, if you're not at home, where do you get it?
Right.
So.
And that's the problem. You know, again, going back to last week when we were broadcasting live from the Washington show, I had an interview with a guy from the DOE, Department of Energy, and he made a hell of a good point. He said, look, we have to let the free market decide this stuff. He says, the electric guys come to me and say, oh, we have to have a smart grid. We have to build up a whole new infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And then the hydrogen guys come and say, hey, we've got to have hydrogen. We have to build a whole infrastructure. And the natural gas guys come and say, hey, we've got to have natural gas and we've got to build up the infrastructure. He says, we can probably do one infrastructure.
There you go, yeah.
And let's let the market decide which one it should be. And I was like, wow, this guy's great.
Isn't that how we got the gas station? I mean,
yeah.
90 years
That's
ago?
That's right. Henry Ford didn't get a big loan from the government.
Exactly.
Right. Let's see here. Alan Andrews in Oregon says, the Porsche hybrid with the flywheel may have a secret weapon. When you rotate a running flywheel in one dimension, it pushes at right angles. Hold a rotating bicycle wheel while sitting on a bar stool. My question is this. If it's set up so the car... is it set up so if the car rotates into a corner, does it act at right angles and what he's getting at is
it's the vertical axis.
Yeah.
But what the Porsche people have said is no, you don't feel
it's not enough
flywheel
mass
at all
there to make any difference.
Right. Yeah. The angle momentum.
The Patriot, the old Chrysler thing, that one, that was a big honker, and that thing did, I think you probably could throw out all the anti-roll bars on that car. Of course, if it all went south, someone dies too, and they did. So
yeah, the shrapnel would be.
Yeah, you're spinning.
And it did. It killed somebody, and that killed that program. Mm-hmm.
Well, we got a new email that just came in. Wow, so the dude who kept his subscription when the Renault Alliance was Motor Trend's Car of the Year?
Yeah, exactly.
Bought a nice K car?
Right. One more here. What is the scrap rate for cars? Last time I heard it was 12 million a year. I think it's up to 14 million now.
Really?
We're now scrapping more cars in this country than we are building. So that's the national car fleet is actually decreasing.
That's surprising because you keep hearing about people keeping cars longer and used car prices are up and so on and so forth.
Those got to be greater than 10 years old easily, and not enthusiast cars and kid car cars.
Right. No, it's. Yeah, I mean, cars are the oldest they've ever been in the history, at least since the Great Depression in this country.
So we're at a SAR like 12 million or so, and you're saying 14 million?
We're at a scrap rate of about, so we have a net loss of about 2 million cars a year right now.
More parking places.
Yeah. Yeah, well, it's probably just more open space in the junkyards is my guess.
How about one more thing? Maybe you should talk about this on Autoline Daily tomorrow. How about Craft Check? coming up with, we're gonna announce our fleet average by the month of fuel economy. Man.
That's, what Hyundai decided to do is calculate on a sales-weighted basis what their CAFE is, which is what they've got to report to the government anyway.
And they just say, well, why don't we tell
consumers?
Why don't
we do it publicly? Well,
because it wiggles up every couple of months, you know.
Well, not only that.
Especially with Elantra coming on stream.
Right. Hyundai's number one of all the manufacturers right now. That's why it wants to do it.
Of course, they're not a full line, so.
They're not a full line, but that's, you know, the public's not going to know that. They're just going to hear Hyundai is number one, number one, number one. The other thing that I think that they're trying to do is goad the regulators into raising CAFE. Because right now there's a big argument in Washington. Should the post-16 CAFE standard be 42 miles per gallon or 47 miles per gallon or 62 miles per gallon? Well, the higher they push that number up, the more it's going to hurt Hyundai's direct competitors, Toyota, Honda, Nissan, which are not full line like the Detroit 3 are, but it's going to hurt them and the Detroit 3. So I think that's the reasoning.
Yeah, and mentally, the constituents and the dopes in Washington that don't pay attention to this stuff go, well, they're more than halfway there already. When, of course, it's not the same number either. People don't get the, you know, they think of their window sticker number. Oh, my car only gets, you know, 17 and 25, and this their whole average is 34. Well, that's the unadjusted, and, you know, you got to.
Right. And then the other craziness that, you know, EPA is talking about of assigning letter grades for fuel economy.
That's
which
stupid,
is really stupid. Because, you know, again, if I'm somebody with a family and I got to get a minivan, oh, I got to buy something that only gets a C. Well, it might be the best minivan in the business.
Right.
But I'm buying a C. It's
totally stupid.
That's bullshit. Totally bullshit.
I got one last thing here. Comment from Ben to say, be sure to plug Peter's new book, Witch Hunt.
Yes.
Ooh, I like that title. Yeah.
Witchhuntbook.com. It's finally here. Mm. And you can connect it to it on the Auto Extremist website. There's a billboard ad at the bottom of Rant and on the table. And it's going to be good. It's got a really compelling cover if you like covers.
There it is.
Cool. There it is up there.
That's not the cover, but that's just the web page.
Oh, okay.
Okay, one last shameless promotion before we wrap up the show. I mentioned that guy from DOE. You can catch all of our Washington, D.C. show coverage on the John's Journal section of our website at AutolineDetroit.tv. But anyway, John Warniak, thanks so much for coming on.
Hey, this is fun stuff.
Excellent, man.
Fun
this stuff. Is great talking with you. Frank, great having you back
always
here,
fun.
As always.
And, yep.
And Peter DeLorenzo.
John, always glad.
Oh, yeah. No, this is good to do. Thanks for watching, folks. And don't forget that you can friend us on Facebook, facebook.com/Autoline Detroit. Follow us at Twitter, twitter.com/Autoline. Read Peter's stuff at autoextremist.com. Follow him at twitter.com/Autoextremist. Motortrend.com, I'm sure, right?
Mm-hmm.
And what, SEMA.org?
There you go.
All right.
Enjoy the drive.
We'll do that. Don't forget you can get all our stuff via Stitcher. And thanks, folks. It's great been having you here.
And good night, Simon, wherever you are.
Visit our website, AutolineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Autoline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Autoline Detroit. That's all there and much more at AutolineDetroit.tv.
Autoline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence. Chevrolet, the all-new Chevrolet Cruze. Get used to more. And by Dow Automotive Systems, innovations for clean powertrain solutions.